I mean, if you break this down, you know, which I'm always trying to make things simpler, are we just looking at, you know, proliferation rate, and you give them hormonal therapy, and if it goes down, that's a good thing?
Not just proliferation rate, but if you gave endocrine therapy in this particular trial and you happen to have a tumor where it went down, it did contribute quite a bit. It turns out because of this log transformation of the Ki-67 proliferation index, it's the single most powerful factor.
It's kind of intuitive. I mean, tumors aren't proliferating as much after you give them therapy, Paul. I mean, it's kind of a base. What's been the obstacle to utilizing this kind of a concept? Is Ki-67, first of all, a reliable test in the community?
The answer to that is no. But the obstacle is the ability to tie these kinds of neoadjuvant. I mean, the neoadjuvant laboratory is wonderful, and it's sort of research tool du jour at the moment for all types of targeted therapies. The problem with it is it has to be linked to clinical outcome, and that requires long-term follow-up and large patient subsets. Because I think sometimes dramatic results in the neoadjuvant setting will predict long-term outcome, and sometimes they won't. It'll depend on the therapy. Who says that an angiogenesis inhibitor's behavior on the primary tumor is going to be the same in micrometastatic disease, in bone, or in the brain, or in some other place? You have to make that link. You have to find the data and follow the data, and that's the obstacle. So I think what's happening is, it's really quite an interesting question, because what's happening is, we're doing this in our own center. We were discussing it this week in research rounds. We're doing one neoadjuvant study after another with a different combination. You know, we do one combination, we show it's better. You know, we're doing randomized phase two neoadjuvant trials, you know, cisplatinum plus Avastin versus cisplatinum alone. We're just completing that one right now. So if we show that it's better, then is the next neoadjuvant trial cisplatinum Avastin versus something cisplatinum Avastin and something else? No, we just go to, now we're going to do one with a PARP inhibitor. We're going to do platinum and a PARP inhibitor. We're not going to put Avastin, regardless of the result. Because you can't assume that the result of a neoadjuvant trial is going to be the result long-term, adjuvantly, right?
I would say you can after it's been validated in a prospective phase three trial.
Right.
Tom?
I think one of the problems is that the intermediate endpoint you're looking at may vary according to the treatment. So that for chemotherapy, pathologic complete response rate is a good intermediate. For this, Ki-67, loss of ER, is more important than pathologic CR. And for anti-angiogenic therapies and so on, it may be something different. So that intermediate endpoint has to be validated. By then, you've gone on to something else.
You know, when you give endocrine therapy nowadays, it's at least 5 years, maybe longer. You know, there are a lot of issues about committing somebody to that. You know, could we be moving towards a situation where we're going to sort of try to validate in the neoadjuvant setting, A, whether the hormonal therapy really is going to be helpful in terms of how it might affect Ki-67, and maybe even look for different kinds of hormonal therapy. Is that something, a trial concept that's being considered or looked at?
Sure. I mean, I think that Craig and Tom are right. This is the beginning of validating changes in the neoadjuvant setting that are useful intermediate surrogate markers of long-term outcome. And that was what was missing from neoadjuvant. You know, we've been doing neoadjuvant endocrine therapy for a long time, tamoxifen, and it's been shown to be highly effective clinically, you know, causing tumor regressions, etc. But we didn't have the link to long-term outcome, and that's where these data are now becoming good. Your question was, are we going to start using
the neoadjuvant situation to sort of make decisions about whether to commit somebody to 5 or 10 years of hormonal therapy?
Potentially giving less treatment, even?
Yeah. Different treatment.
The problem there is that you're not really sure that those patients who are doing the worst, you're assuming that they're not deriving any benefit from endocrine therapy.
Or maybe
at all,
they need an alternative therapy.
Which may not be the case. They may be benefiting from therapy, but they need an additional therapy to further improve the likelihood of being cured.
This approach is not taken very often in this country. And you know, I've done trials with neoadjuvant hormonal therapy, and it's sort of inelegant because you give hormone therapy, you know, do their surgery. But this is a patient whom, if you didn't give neoadjuvant hormone therapy, you would give chemotherapy and hormone therapy to it. So what you end up doing is treating them with hormones, and then you give them chemotherapy, and then you put them back on hormones. And what this allows you to do is pick out perhaps the patients in whom you don't have to give chemotherapy. And so it's sort of a poor man's oncotype. It integrates, you know, response to therapy with underlying prognosis. And for right now, it's going to be a small subset of patients. But if you could do this in 2 weeks, 4 weeks, with neoadjuvant hormone therapy, then it could be broadly applied.
I think your analogy is a good one, because the magnitude of those separation between the curves of the PEPI score are very similar to the B14 New England Journal paper. I mean, there's about that much distance between low risk, intermediate risk, and high risk in these now that you point out, the big difference is the proportion of patients that fall in the low risk category by assessing these standard variables is considerably smaller, but 10% is a lot of patients.